Hello and welcome to this slightly strange episode of the J-Rod Tour Pod, because for the first time in our podcast sort of history, I'm going to be doing a podcast on my own, because unfortunately Ollie is otherwise engaged this evening and can't make it to talk about an exciting stage of the Tour de France. So it's just you and me in the tour tonight. So let's get into it. So a bit of an interesting day on the Tour de France today. There was quite a lot going on early doors. There was an initial breakaway which jumped up the road, but was marked quite well by the peloton. They never were allowed to get sort of out of touch, and they were reeled in, in decent time before a intermediate sprint section, which was about 50k from the end. And when Peter Sagan and Sam Bennett went up the road to contest the intermediate sprint, I mean, Sam Bennett looked completely in control, as he has done, actually, essentially just marking and checking every move that Sagan has made over the last couple of weeks now. So they went up the road with a couple of lead out riders and actually got a bit of a jump on the rest of the peloton coming through that, because they were more concerned about rolling over together. But it seemed like Sagan then drove the pace quite hard, because he knew that he had Bennett isolated, and if he could push the pace hard enough, he might be able to turn it into something a bit more and maybe get a stage win and hopefully do a sort of group effort and rely on the fact that the peloton wouldn't catch them because they were more interested in the GC races. So there was a pretty elite group of guys that went up the road, including people like Greg Van Avermaet, Søren Krogh-Andersen, and it was interesting to see Ineos's Luke Rowe in there as well, because a rider that we're not used to sort of seeing on the attack and riding hard for himself. But, you know, this is a new look Ineos, because they have no GC contender, so we're getting used to seeing things we're not used to seeing. And then about 16k from the end, Søren Krogh-Andersen from Team Sunweb attacked on his own, and it was at a moment where that elite group was kind of looking for someone to... There'd been one attack already, and they were looking for someone to sort of galvanise them and organise them. They were working quite well to gain a gap on the peloton that they were comfortable that they wouldn't be caught with. But there was a bit of hesitation going on, and Krogh-Andersen actually picked his moment very well. It was on a descent where it was like through trees, so because it was lots of little windy corners, he could kind of get out of sight quite quickly, at which point you almost forget that there's a rider up the road because you can't see him and you think, oh, it's too far. There was an interesting bit where he was fiddling with an earpiece. So we don't really know whether he had his earpiece in for the whole time and couldn't hear, or he took it out to just make sure that he was going absolutely full gas for an individual time trial effort to the finish. But it was amazing to see him just going as hard as he could and really not looking round until the very, very end. So that was an exciting thing to see, and he did fantastically well to get in front and stay in front. And then there was a sort of a secondary attack from Luke Rowe, who took a couple of people up the road, including Luca Mezgec, Jasper Stuyven from Trek Segafredo, Greg Van Avermaet, and Oliver Nason, as well as Nicholas Arndt and obviously Luke Rowe himself. Ended up a little bit up the road trying to chase Søren Krogh-Andersen down, but they just couldn't manage it. I mean, he finished with a 53-second gap and was trundling those last couple of 100 metres, not pushing all the way to the end. So it was an interesting stage from the fact that we had a big, quite strong breakaway that just rode away from the peloton. They were working very well together in that initial part, and then as soon as they hesitated, a solo breakaway took it all the way to the end, which was very impressive to see. Looking at the green jersey then, because this was a day that was earmarked for the sprinters, as I said earlier, Sam Bennett basically just marked and checked exactly what Peter Sagan was doing. He just followed him basically on his wheel the entire way, just making sure he snuck in front of him over the line in both the intermediate and the final sprint, just to take those couple more points off him. You know, if Bennett connects 16 points, he will become the green jersey winner. So I think it's unlikely that Sagan catches him now. Almost inevitable that Bennett ends up in green. I think the only thing that might happen is if Bennett has a nasty crash in the time trial, that might force him to withdraw, but I can't see that happening. He will just do what he needs to do to get through on Saturday and then get into a fun race on the Champs-Élysées, which will obviously be an interesting one, because what better way to seal a win in your green for your first green jersey than to win on the most famous bit of road in cycling. Turning our attention though to the yellow jersey, not much happened today. It was a very controlled ride and Primoz Roglic looks supreme, and I think, again, barring any major mishap, he's going to take the yellow jersey all the way into Paris. He has got the mountain time trial, which could be an Achilles heel for him, but he's in such great form that I can't see anyone taking it on. UAE looked strong, bringing Tadej Pogacar over the line, but again, nothing too much to talk about there. So it all remains very similar. Primoz Roglic in first, Pogacar in second, and then Miguel Angel Lopez at the moment is in third. I think that's an interesting spot to watch, is that last spot on the podium, because Richie Porte, who's in fourth, is a minute and a half behind Miguel Angel Lopez, but Richie Porte is a fantastic time trial rider, and it will be interesting to see how he gets on. I think he would have hoped for a flatter time trial where he could make use of his strengths a little bit more, but this mountain time trial tomorrow is going to be very interesting. So looking at that then, because it is a fascinating stage, it's up the La Planche de Bellefille, which is where Bradley Wiggins really cemented his Tour de France winning ambitions in 2012. It was stage 7 back then. But it's relatively flat for the first 13K until the first checkpoint. The first time in checkpoint's 14.5K in, and then it's a gradual rise of about 300 metres over the next 10K, and then a slight descent before quite a serious uphill for the last 6K. So essentially the last 15-20K is a climb with a tiny downhill in the middle of that. But I think the thing that's going to be so interesting to talk about tomorrow is that a lot of the teams and a lot of the director sportifs are discussing the possibilities of going for a bike change. We've seen this in time trials before where, you know, for the flat sections, they're aware that a time trial bike is the most useful because the aero position that the riders can get in is so beneficial. But you wouldn't really want to be climbing a very steep climb at the end. I mean, it's a categorized one climb, so it's 5.9K, 8.5% average. You wouldn't want to be doing that on a time trial bike because it's just not as comfortable to climb on. You're not going to be able to get the most out of yourself. Also, these guys have been on road bikes for weeks and they're very comfortable with their setups now. So I think you'll see a real mismatch of how different people attack this. Some people might try and do the whole thing on a time trial bike. Some people might even try and do the whole thing on a road bike. But I think you'll see a lot of teams going for the switch option, and I think that will probably happen about 6K from the end, just before the first kick of the last climb. But, you know, it's going to be interesting. We're a week out from the World Championships, the Cycling World Championships, so you're going to have some people who are treating this as a sort of bit of a training ride, potentially, but I can't see anyone catching Primoz Roglic. This is always, you know, this second to last stage, especially when it's a time trial, is always considered a bit of a coronation. It's their chance to go out and show why they're the strongest rider. And because they've had so many people working for them, strangely, they might be the freshest. But it's going to be a fascinating day. It goes off in reverse GC order, so This should take the riders just, 45 minutes to an hour. I think some of the slower riders will be taking it quite relaxed today, tomorrow, but we're excited to see how it happens. I mean, Tadej Pogacar won the Slovenian time trial championships over Primoz Roglic, but it was only 8 seconds, and I think there was a bike change in that as well. So that you know, these two riders, you know, at the sharp end of the Tour de France will have got some past experience in time trialing against each other. Right, so that kind of concludes our solo J-Rod Tour pod, looking back at stage number 19 of the Tour de France. Join us tomorrow night when I have Ollie back to look back at a time trial that is going to be fascinating to look at. And obviously we've got our F1 pod coming out over the weekend as well with guest host Sam Courty. But until then, please make sure that you be a friend and tell a friend about the J-Rod Sports Pod.